Welcome back to another episode of A Simple Life with Michael Jeffries. On this podcast, we attempt to let go of all the subtext and social barriers that hold us back. It isn't about being right or wrong. We're just trying to keep it real. As he was introduced in episode 24, part A, Daniel Bettich is one of my closest friends. He has challenged me to think differently in a number of areas. Two of the biggest that come to mind are making meditation a regular part of my life, and introducing me to the lectures and writings of Alan Watts, who I've come to admire and recommend to friends as well. This interview with Daniel was the first in-person interview I've done in quite some time, and I have to say, it was extra special. I really love how there was no formal start to the interview, but instead we just started talking, as we would in a normal friend-to-friend conversation. This time, though, it just happened to include a microphone in the room with us. There's something really intimate and special about the conversation. This is truly a meandering conversation that I'll enjoy listening back to for years to come. Now let's get into it.
I am a perfectionist, for sure. And that's something I try and rein in a little bit, for sure.
Tell me more about that.
I don't know. I think it's become apparent at work, okay. Right? If you have any kind of project as a designer, craft is important, right? Mm-hmm. Craft is important to pay attention to the fine details. Craft this thing, have some craftsmanship until it is perfect, right? Like you're building furniture or something like that. And then the very fabric of the discipline seems like it's encouraged, right? And then because that being there, it perfectionism has always been in me, I think. It was dormant, right? And then it really kind of came out and I was like, wow, this is kind of a problem, because then in any even interaction I have with somebody or any kind of time I'm trying to explain something, I'm always hard on myself for, you could have done it better. You could have explained that better. And at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter if you could have done it better. As long as the message got across, that's good. But all of that mental energy to harp on pushing it better gets to a fault at some point. I think that's what drives some of my success, is always being hard on myself on that like that and not being satisfied. But at some point, you got to be content, right?
Or let it go. Let it be what it is.
Yeah, right.
I got as far as I'm going to get. I mean, that's definitely a part of this for me. When I edit, I'm constantly should I do it a little bit better? Should I try and get these ambient noises out of there?
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, it's just I get to the point where it's I'm sick of working on this. It's going to be this.
Yeah, right. But that also feels like a cop-out, and that doesn't feel good if you're just I'm tired, and I'm.
It's a discipline,
right?
It's just like the craftsmanship. It's a discipline to get to the place where you let it go.
Yeah,
I'm serious, man.
Yeah, it's for me. It's got to tie back to the why. Why are you doing this thing? Sure. And if you're satisfying that, then it's good enough, right?
Right.
If you're editing or whatever, if it has achieved your vision that we just talked about, then it's perfect relative to that vision, right? And if you keep that in mind, that's what I've been trying to do, then you can be much more lenient on what seems like needs to be perfect. I don't know if that's nature or nurture either.
Genetics? Did this start? Can you point to a place in your life where you were this is when I became a perfectionist?
No. I mean, I think there's got to be some upbringing in there. I'm just
okay.
If... in school, kids get I remember kids getting paid for good grades.
Classmates,
right? And they're like, yeah, I got $50 because I got 5 A's, you know. And I was like, holy shit, dude, holy crap. I was a fifth grader, sixth grader, whatever,
right?
I'm like, I don't get paid for good grades, I get punished for bad grades,
right?
You know, and if I get B's were fine, C, no way, that's not acceptable. And I'm not saying my parents were that hard on me or anything. I had a good upbringing, right? But I think there was a certain level of that, that's not okay, you need to do better. And I adapted that for myself to hold on to that standard. Oh. I think that is coupled with nature, which is OCD, which I also have.
Okay.
Not like actually diagnosed, I don't think, but I think I have more than enough evidence to self-diagnose myself with that.
Okay.
For example, I'm told when I was 3 or whatever, for like playing trucks and stuff, I would line up all the trucks by color and in order and like just organize them. Right. I just like to organize shit and toys. So like, it seems very clear that that's kind of always been the case. And I definitely have OCD quirks of like light switches. I need, if once they turn it off, I always need to hit it again, like in the direction of off to make sure it's off. Right. Or like stove burners, right? I need to like always touch the knobs to make sure they're off. Like, and I read something at some point where there's always some kind of event or trigger that causes these quirks to happen for people. Like at one point, I remember distinctly for light switches, I flipped one and it only went like halfway perfectly between off and on, and it made like a little buzzing noise, right? When I was like young. And ever since that happened, that's been with me since.
Really?
Right? Another one that's funny is I remember if I ever would like spin around and like
get dizzy.
Circles, yeah. I would need to spin the other direction equal amount of times that I spun the first way to like get back to zero, if that makes sense. Really weird shit. So like if you combine this like weird OCD part, which I acknowledge and I try to use it to my benefit in my job, back to the designer role, right? Let your OCD flourish where it makes sense, control where it doesn't, right? And that, yeah, to me is very tightly coupled with perfectionism.
Okay.
Right? And then I've been wanting to read books and just literature on perfectionism to understand more about it, be able to articulate better, understand it better, to deal with it. But it's not a bad thing. It's the worst thing to have, because it can serve you well, right, in a lot of different areas.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. As I get older, that's the thing that I've learned, is that like things that can hurt you can also help you. Yeah. And that we all have those things.
Right.
Right. Yin yang philosophy.
Sure.
Basic philosophy, right?
Basics. Everybody knows yin yang.
Not everybody, but like, you know, like you gotta have a valley to know that you're on a hill.
Right. Gotta have light to have dark, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
The contrast. Right.
It's interesting you say you feel like you have OCD, because like one of the things that I've always respected about you, and it feels like you have, is a very like you're not antisocial, but you have a very introspective way of living your life. And so
yeah,
like that self-diagnosis thing, I tend to believe you.
Yeah.
Not because I see OCD behavior in your life, just because you seem to know yourself really well. Like you've spent a lot of time getting to know yourself.
Yeah. I think two things. The first thing that obviously comes to mind is meditation. There, and this is bound to come up at some point today. This is certainly top of mind for me.
You are someone who really influenced me around meditation.
Do you meditate frequently still?
Not frequently. Okay. No, I have some other exercises that I do that are disciplined, similar.
Yeah.
But I haven't done like what you would describe as meditation for some time. Not because I don't like it. It's just I haven't thought about it.
Right. Yeah, I just realized I'm coming up on the 10-year mark
of meditating every day.
Not every day, I've certainly missed some, but consistently.
Nice, man.
Yeah.
It's a long time. And your life, that's a huge part of your life.
Yeah. I started when I was 19.
Okay.
So like we were talking about, I'm coming up on 29 rounding out this decade of my life. But that's certainly what comes to mind most, is everything there and how that's evolved and being more introspective in that way. And then I think living by myself for 2 years, I think living by yourself is something everybody should do.
Hmm.
Right. Cause I don't know, every moment you're alone. And this ties back to, I was going to say something, I forgot what I was going to talk about, or what I was going to say, but, the quality, like the main quality or measure, the main measure for how I measure the quality of my life, something like that, is how you are with yourself.
Hmm.
right? So that environment in your head, like just how you are with yourself and in your day to day, especially when you're alone, how is that? Mm-hmm. Right? Because that can make your life a living hell or heaven on earth, right? Depending on how that goes. And
yeah,
that is, we said the good side of OCD was professionally, right? The bad side of perfectionism is nagging at yourself always, right? And not allowing for just content, peace, mm-hmm. right? And that gets at that basic quality of how you are with yourself, right? And mm-hmm. So yeah, I that was something I wanted to mention, that that's definitely a factor. But it just is important to me. And after listening to philosophy and Alan Watts, namely, is one that I'm very interested in. He was one that said that.
You're still into Alan Watts?
Oh, yeah. Dude, so...
You are the one who introduced me to Alan Watts. Oh. Such an influence on my life.
You know where I originally heard him from?
No.
Was Starfucker. Right there. That nice, poster.
Dude.
Yeah. So no in their songs during my freshman year in college, I got into them through some buddies in the dorm, and they had some like philosopher mixed into the song in the background. And after my, you know, 20th, 30th time listening to the song, I hear something in the back and I like really listening to it. And I'm like, he's talking about great wiggly things, and the earth is a wiggle. People are wiggles, and everybody's trying to classify things and put things in boxes, right? You can't put things in boxes, right? It's just like nature. But I'm like, right. That kind of resonates. And who is that? And I found out it was Alan Watts, and then dug in further. And the Waking Up app with Sam Harris, he's like a celebrity. I'm a big fan of his. Like, people like drool over celebrities and Drake and whatever, and they want to meet him. Like, I couldn't care less. I want to meet Sam Harris. Like, that's my guy.
Sam Harris, Waking Up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So he has an app, and I bought the lifetime membership to the app a while back. I think it was like $400. It's a $100 annual subscription, so 4 years from now,
right,
paid off, right? Makes sense. But anyway, he added the entire Alan Watts collection onto the app.
Mm-hmm.
All of his lectures, anything ever recorded, is on there now. So that totally reignited my interest in it. And I think it was all made possible by, he like reached out to Mark Watts, his son, and he just agreed to like open it up to everybody on the app and go for it.
Nice.
So, but yeah, so like the combination of meditation and philosophy is what I've used to continually drive that introspection, and that the driving factor behind that is how I am with myself, right? And always wanting to improve that. That makes sense. And religion is always, I think, touted as like a way to be better with yourself and like kind of solve that issue, per se, if I can call it an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a religious household, Christian, pretty heavily. And I'm not a dogmatic person. I can't accept truth without knowing it for myself. So all of this meditation and philosophy is based off of direct experience that you have, right? Not believing anything more than that, just direct experience. And I think that's why I resonate so much with the Waking Up app, is because that's what he gets at. He gets at that level of that approach to meditation, I think.
Okay.
Zen Buddhism is like the main influence on that, rather than like a Headspace or a Calm that I've done in the past, which is much more just object-based, focus on the breath. It's used as a means to an end to get calm or lower your blood pressure or something like that. It's not the existential like consciousness, like explore this kind of.
So does time. Harris still do that kind of stuff, or is his all like the principles of Zen Buddhism and digging into those concepts as the form of meditation?
I think it's much more the latter, and that's why people don't like it.
Okay.
There's so many people that
too heady.
Yeah, it's not very accessible.
Okay.
And I didn't really like it at first either. It's just different. Like, focusing on my breath, I was a champion at it. Like, after 6 years of Headspace, I'm like...
You turned me on to Headspace, and it was great.
Yeah, Andy,
it does,
man,
calm you down.
Andy's my other guy.
Yeah.
And that was good, but, like, it really lacks variety and going beyond that. Like, just focusing on the breath, I feel like.
Okay.
And they pursued, like, the Nike... like collaboration and like Star Wars and like they went very Hollywood with it and like tried to like make it, which I think is great because that reaches more of an audience.
Sure.
But does it go deeper? I don't think so. So like I switched over to waking up and first couple meditations when he's telling me to turn attention back on itself. You know, if you're like looking, I'm sitting here as an object, I'm staring over at this, these bottles of beer on my table in my basement, and like turn attention back on yourself. Look for the looker, look for your head. And like, what the fuck is this guy talking about? You know, like what is he getting at? But through pairing that with philosophy that's in the app, through those meditations, continuing on now, I think 4 years later, that is exactly what has kind of unlocked deeper insights for myself. And better understanding of myself, and therefore contributing further to knowing thyself, which you mentioned.
What is one of the things that stands out for you as like a, this is a thing that Sam Harris and Waking Up has done to improve my life?
Help me understand non-dualism.
What does that mean?
So I wrote a small list. I had no idea what to expect for today. Okay. I wrote a small list of the things I wanted to talk about with you.
Sweet.
I had two things, I think. One was, why did you make this podcast?
Okay.
The second was, why did you want to interview me? Which maybe we touched on those two. Maybe we'll touch on them more. And the third was non-dualism.
Sweet.
Let's get into it. And I think that we were headed out to Three Rivers a while back, and I had first kind of stumbled upon the concept and first glimpsed what it meant and like what it felt like. And I was trying to articulate it and explain it to you, and I don't think I did a very good job at it, because
I remember the day we went and played disc golf.
Yeah
And it wasn't uncommon for you to be sharing something like this, like that's
typical Daniel.
Well, that's one of the things I love about you, is that you're constantly trying to improve yourself and expand your knowledge and and center yourself, and but I don't remember that much about the concept.
Yeah, neither do I, because I probably did a horrible job at explaining it. And I was like, oh, fuck it, man. Let's just go play some disc golf. Which, by the way, we'll put a pin in non-dual for a minute. My favorite disc golf course in the area is 5 minutes west of here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Nice spot, man.
I tell Erica it's not why we bought the house, but this, it just, and it really wasn't, but it worked out damn well, because...
Did you already know it was your favorite when you bought the house?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah, even better.
I loved it. And then once we found the house, then I started looking at the map. We're seriously going to put in an offer on it. And I was like, holy shit, this is 5 minutes from Independence Lake. Like, that's unreal.
Sweet. What a gift.
So, yeah, I was thinking, I was like, maybe we can fit around in today, but... Given daylight and given this, I don't think that's a possibility. Because this is much more novel for me. I can disc golf anytime. How many times can I have a great conversation with an old friend record it?
Anytime, right? You want, technically. That's true. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
As far as historically, you know, speaking, in my life, this is a new thing.
Right. So, we haven't seen each other for four months, maybe?
Since September.
Yeah, 4 months.
Something like that.
So, yeah, I would say this is novel these days. Yeah. Considering that it wasn't too long ago, like maybe a couple of years ago, that we saw each other at least once a week and went into a basement like this and hung out, played cards, smoked weed, had a good time. You know what I mean? Like buddies.
Right.
And now it's like a couple times a year we'll get together.
Right. The once a week cadence is something I learned from you. Because you were, you know, married, had kids, and it was... not as easy just to do whatever. I was living by myself.
Sure.
Right. Fresh out of college. I had all the time in the world.
Right.
And there's something about... So I'd never done that before, but there's something about counting on that weeknight as being this thing. Like Wednesday night is when we get shitty Little Caesars and get together and hang out and usually have conversations somewhere along like this.
Yeah.
Right, along these lines. And I love just punctuating the week like that consistently in a way that you can count on.
Mm-hmm. Ritual.
Ritual. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just now trying to start integrating that into my life in ways that matter. For example, I am doing a weekly Well, let me stay here first. Just seeing friends in general. Like, recently, we haven't seen each other in forever. Yeah. I moved back to the east side, right?
Right.
I think I see my friends less than I did in Kalamazoo. Because there was something about, like, come out to the city, come visit. It's drivable from the east side of Michigan to the west side, about an hour and a half. And we would spend a full 48 hours straight together.
Right? And very intentionally spending it together because you don't see each other that much.
Right.
Yep.
And now I'm here, I'm like, there's no... Like, people aren't going to drive a half hour and then stay here for the weekend.
Right.
There's just something about logic that, like, that doesn't make sense. I'm going to go home after the day is over. And I think I'm seeing people less now. So I'm like, all right. Okay. I was talking to my friend who's an hour away. And I said, we're going to set up just, it sounds like it's not a lot, but once a month. Just once a month, we're going to get together at a meeting point and have a drink or two at minimum. And that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but if I do that, I'll see him about 10 times more a year than I do right now, right? And similar for you and I, if we just count on once a year, you're like, well, that doesn't sound like a lot, but...
At least it's there.
At least it's there, and yeah, that totally will agree. Be probably more than if you didn't set up something like that, right?
Yeah.
If you just counted on, oh yeah, we'll see each other, we'll see each other. You see that in passing? This shit ain't gonna happen. It never does, unless you get on the book. Case in point... We scheduled this, and we talked about this in June. And here we are in January. Yeah, actually doing it.
Yeah, which is awesome. I think that's a part of adult life, is like you get less instant gratification, but there's more appreciation. Like, I really appreciate this. You know what I mean? Like, this is a good thing for me, and it's just a conversation with my buddy. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's so special to me. Versus, you know, when you were a kid, you looked forward to Christmas. Like, I look forward to this just as much as I look forward to Christmas as a kid. You know, like, wow. This is a big gift.
Makes me Santa Claus, kind of.
No. Speaking of which, anticipation. If you and Erica want to come, me and Amber are going to Cozumel at the end of February.
That's what you said.
Oh, yeah. No, you're already taking a gut trip. I'm going sorry.
To Florida, yeah.
Right. Soon.
You're teasing me with it.
Soon. You're going soon.
Yeah, as are you, apparently.
Well, a month from now.
Yeah.
I think you're That's going exciting. In January.
Is Sebastian though, going?
He hasn't got back to me. I doubt it at
Probably
this point.
Probably not,
if he
yeah.
hasn't, if he hasn't.
Back to the whole planning thing. Like,
yeah.
He's not confirmed at this point. Yeah. Not so much.
Yeah, probably not.
That would be a great trip.
It will be.
Yeah. But the other thing I'm starting to punctuate my week with now is pickleball.
Really?
Yeah.
You're a pickleballer.
I fucking love pickleball, dude.
You and the rest of America. That's awesome.
It's a hell of a good time.
Is it?
And it's a great workout, and it's something that I can go do once a week, right? Yep. And then count on that time being there. I did like a 101 class, a 102 class, and then I just went to my first open round robin kind of format night. Just show up at the pickleball warehouse, and they match you with a random person and play with them for 20 minutes, and the bell rings, you find a new person, you play with them.
Nice.
So just really kind of getting thrown into the mix, and I think I was the youngest person there by 25 years. it was pretty wild. The next youngest person, I think, was like 48 or something like that, and I didn't know. I knew it had like a big appeal amongst the older crowd, because it's not as physically demanding as tennis, but there was not a single other person within 20 years of me there, which it was funny.
And you obviously were okay with that because you went back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm sure it was weird at first.
I'm chatting them up, hanging out. Yeah, it's fun. Absolutely. I'm not the best in that group, but I certainly have the most hustle. Like, there's like, if they miss a ball, like, it's too far out of reach, like, they won't really try, right? Like, I'll fucking dive.
You'll dig for it.
Yeah, it's like, it's the same hustle I play with, like, spike ball with in the yard. Like, I am there to play and win, and I hope I can move up and like move up in divisions.
They have divisions.
It's player rankings. Yeah, so it's
interesting.
Basic level entry is 2.5. Don't ask me why it works this way. It is, okay. Like other weird things. But 2.5 is entry. Then it goes to 3.0, 3.5, 4.0, 4.5, 5.0. 5.0 is pro. You're professional. You'll be on ESPN playing for money if you're 5 rated. people who are there are giving classes. They have like each warehouse has a pro, kind of like a golf course.
Okay.
You know, and there are five all rated and teach people and blah blah blah. So I'm 2.5 right now. I think you could call me 3.0.
Okay.
But yeah, I wanna keep on getting better, and it's mostly one, punctuating the week, like I said, and two, a wintertime hobby.
Yeah.
For me. As you know, I don't love the winter, but I would go as far as say it's seasonal affectiveness disorder, but I'm really, really pushing myself to say, yeah, vitamin D might be lacking, right? Take a supplement, and the rest is a mindset, right? And I'm making new hobbies and appreciating just the change of the season. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because we're having a mild winter, but so far this year, I am enjoying every minute of it.
Do you walk your dogs every day?
Yeah, we just started to, actually. It's been pretty inconsistent. And then within the past couple weeks, just fall into a really good routine of make sure that happens every single day.
That's been a huge part of
just getting me outside, yeah.
Me living a good life is, yeah, get outside, and it happens to be to do this chore that quote-unquote needs to be done,
yeah.
You know, but it's so good for my mental overall health.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And emotional. Like, it just helps me. I mean, yeah, I don't do a lot of things. Like, my wife does a ton of chores. I do some chores, but that's a big thing in my life that helps, I feel like. That.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Just being outside for a little bit.
Yeah.
And you know, because I agree with you, the winter in Michigan can get...
It can get to you.
Dark and cloudy.
Yeah. And
long.
I would always wish it away.
Okay.
Right? I can't wait for it to be over. Just counting down days till it's over.
Right.
But that impacted my mental health year round.
Right.
Because in the winter, I am just waiting for it to be over. I'm just trying to get through the season.
Yep.
And then there's an immediate, as the weather turns nice, you know, sometime in May probably for us, and there's an immediate anxiety.
Oh no, this is
that's underlying that this is going to end. This is going to end. I need to get all this stuff in before that. And it was just like this game of cat and mouse. I'm just like, this is going to end, or I can't wait for this to end. And there's always some kind of underlying mental chatter related to that going on. And this year, I think is the first year I've experienced the absence of that because of what I just said, right? And I'm just embracing the change of the season. And it's pickleball season. That's something to get excited about, and I'll save that for the winters and blah, blah, blah. And the change in how I am with myself, back to that, has been radically different through this year. And again, you could contribute to a warm winter, but I don't think so.
It seems
much more significant than that to me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's helped. And yeah, pickleball.
Nice, man.
That's what saves it.
You bring up something that you also had a big influence in my life. I did an episode on it called The Eternity of Now. But it's the concept that you gave me an Eckhart Tolle book to read, but the principle of live in the now, man.
Yeah.
Stop worrying about the future or living in the past. Like, enjoy right now. Look around you. See the trees. See this beautiful
tapestry.
Yeah. Is that what that would be?
Yeah, tapestry. That's fair.
You know, take in my friend this moment. Not trying. Like, that was another thing about just the podcast. I keep on going back to that as an example of these things, but...
On the table.
Oh.
Coffee refill.
Coffee refill. Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
Save some for yourself.
All yours.
So much for saving for yourself.
Another half cup for you.
Was not trying to figure out where the episode needed to go. Right, just let the conversation flow and live right now and take it in and see where it goes. Let it go there. I wrote this little cheat sheet of how to interview people for myself, and one of them was let the guest lead.
Oh, interesting. So those are like, that's a value that you live by as a host.
Yes.
is let the guests lead.
Okay. As much as possible.
That's good, because I feel like I've been talking too much.
No, I've, if anything, I've been talking too much. You're the interviewee.
Yeah, that's true.
There was something else I wanted to ask you that came up in there.
Present moment thing, though.
Present moment thing.
I had a... So that was like the first self-help book I read, and I don't know why self-help really gets a bad rap.
Me neither. That's what religion is. The entire category of religion is self-help.
Yeah, like, why is it bad to help yourself?
Right. Why is it bad to help yourself?
Like, people are like, oh,
and share knowledge about how to help each other.
Yeah, you're thumping around with your self-help program. I was like, I don't know why it's bad. I fucking love self-help books. And the first one I read was that Eckhart Tolle one, and Live in the Now, and or The Power of Now.
The Power of Now is what he called it.
Yeah. And then I got the book that was like the companion book to it called Practicing the Power of Now. It's like more of a coffee table, revisit it frequently kind of thing.
Yeah.
Another one like that is Stillness Speaks by Eckhart Tolle. It's
really, you bought me Stillness Speaks.
Did I? Yeah. I love that. That's good.
What a gift.
I like doing that. It's just like order something on Amazon, send it to somebody's house, and like, this is a book I think they enjoy. So that's at face value, living in the now, all right, you're a hippie, whatever. But as I've gotten further into that, continue to build knowledge around that, I think this one comes from Alan Watts, at least for myself, is something about, I'm not even going to try and explain it, something about reincarnation and religion. What kind of religions believe in reincarnation? Is that
Hindus?
And they said... you don't literally believe in reincarnation, that you're going to die and come back as something else immediately, right? And you'd be born anew into a different body. It's that we are constantly being reincarnated in and of ourselves in every moment. Hmm. And it's like, if you think you're the same person that you were when we walked down these basement stairs a half hour ago, you're mistaken. You're linking your moments up in a chain, if you are. Right? And that whole concept of linking your moments up in a chain is... the entirety of life to most people.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that is your identity, the story you tell yourself. Like, when you ask somebody who they are, it's a resuscitation of their past.
Or
like their moments linked up.
Or right? They're incredibly dogmatic and not fun to be around. Like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like, the people who have experientially become themselves, in my opinion, are people I want to be around. And they feel like real people to me. And people who live in dogma, they don't feel real. Like,
yeah.
Like, okay, I was just having a conversation like this. Like, my spiritual experiences and my personal experiences lead me to believe these things. And this woman was like, constantly trying to convince me that I was wrong and she was right. Like, it had to be this way.
Yeah.
And all I was saying was, well, my experiential life tells me this.
Yeah.
And that's fine if your life tells you this.
Oh, my God. The evangelist dogmatic combination is a brutal one.
It's a brutal one.
It's not even... They just... don't question and believe it for themselves, but they are telling you, you're wrong, this is right.
Right.
Believe it. Or you're damned to hell.
Yeah, or some terrible thing befall, or you're just an idiot.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
Like, maybe you're not going to hell, but I'm sorry for you, because you're such an idiot.
Right.
Like, that. It's hard to be around those people, because you feel like everything has to be a fight. Like, I'm not trying to fight about it.
No,
I'm
right.
Just sharing with you my personal experience.
Let's get curious, you know, like, let's...
Yeah. Yeah, and how is yours different than mine?
Yeah,
and not why? Like,
yeah.
Not like... Yeah. Yeah, anyways.
Was that somebody you interviewed?
No.
Okay.
I thought about interviewing her.
Did you throw the microphone at her?
No, I thought about interviewing her because it would be such a...
That'd like be good.
A difficult... interview?
I think that'd be actually, yeah.
But I haven't willed myself to ask her
yet. Yeah. That could be a really interesting exercise.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I will, since the father of the podcast is telling me to do that.
Just something that, like, makes you uncomfortable. It's like intentionally listening to something you disagree with just to be exposed to it.
Yeah.
Right. And that's, it kind of reminds me of this other idea of everybody does what they think is right. Like, even that person trying to convince you that she is right is because she thinks that is the right thing to do. It's like, we went on a binge in college. We watched Drugs, Inc.
Okay.
And it's like, follows these lives of these people who deal drugs and cocaine and heroin and shit like that. And
okay.
And through those stories, you see, like, they are doing what they think is right, or given their circumstances or situation, they're doing the best that they can for themselves. Like, truly, in their deepest of mind and heart, like, they are doing what they think they can do best, given how everything's laid out. Mm-hmm. Right. And
interesting.
Instead of just, like, the external, like, you're a bad person because you're, you know, a drug dealer.
Right.
It's like, nobody, and you could go even as far as to say, and I think this is where it gets controversial, is nobody is intentionally a bad person, unless they're a psychopath or some kind of mental disorder, perhaps. But like, of sound mind, nobody's actually ever wants to purposely be a bad person.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's maybe that's more wishful thinking or like fun to think about in theory. But if you take the idea of those the drug sink people and the drug dealers, and they're doing what they think is right, and kind of extrapolate that all the way out. I don't know if that's a fallacy of logic or not, or if you can actually draw that conclusion of, like, yeah, that is everybody, given their unique perspective.
Yeah. I think the motivations of people are there's a duality between...
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, foreshadowing.
Complexity and simplicity. Like, being able to categorize motivations, there's a simplicity to it, but there's also a complexity of how things work together. And I hate to interrupt, but I do need to go to the bathroom really bad. I'm going to smoke, so let's just keep this conversation going, okay?
Put a pause here.
Yeah, I really need to go to the bed.
But remember what you're going to say, because I was...
Okay.
Keep it in mind.
Okay.
Because I was
so
going to ask for clarification.
Well, part of it is like Ayn Rand talked about how everybody does things because they're selfish. And everybody should live as selfishly as possible for the best outcome for humanity. Mm. And there's some truth to that, but I think that's oversimplifying things. So, one thing is an example.
How long are we going for?
Total recording time right now is an hour, but it was recording before we were, like...
Sitting down,
and it recorded during the break. Like, I've had episodes go for, like, 3 hours before.
I can see how that happens. I remember, again, when I first started listening to Joe Rogan, so, like, I can't listen to his podcast. Like, yeah. They're 3 hours long.
I know.
It's like, that's not the point. You just kind of... It's more background. Like,
right.
Because I listen to podcasts, and Erica's in the car. If she wants to say something to me, I pause it. I need to give it my full attention,
right.
Such as the Sam Harris one.
Right.
And then we can talk, and then I can press play and go back to that. And the reason I like his is because they are so conversational that you can talk over it. I'm not going to miss anything. And in fact, if something they're talking about spawns our own conversation among the two of us, then even better, right? It's a good supplement to like a road trip in that regard, as far as just bringing up interesting conversation that you would never get to otherwise. But yeah, doing it now, I can see how you could get to the 3 hour mark pretty easily.
Yeah.
Especially if you're them and having cigars and shit.
Oh, yeah.
Are you much of a cigar smoker?
Oh, sometimes.
I don't think you are. I don't ever remember.
Yeah, I mean, when I tried to quit smoking, I smoked a lot of cigars.
Okay.
And like, there's a dude who's a friend who will smoke cigars together sometimes.
Okay.
But I'm not like...
aficionado level.
I'm not like going out every evening under the porch and smoking a cigar.
Yeah. When did you try and quit smoking?
Tried to quit a couple times. That was probably springtime last year.
Do you still want to quit?
Yeah. I think the plan right now is to start in Cozumel.
Oh, I see.
Like, use that as a distraction,
right,
a thing to keep me busy, and in a way to get out of my everyday routine to get it jump started.
Why not just hop on the Juul train, you know, instead?
Number one, I feel like that's one thing that's scary about that is there's no built-in end to the cigarette. Like, you just go as hard as you want whenever you want.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that will go through an entire breeze in a night.
Yeah.
And that's probably equivalent to who knows how many cigarettes in terms of nicotine.
And then there's all that, there was that big scare a couple years ago about people messing up their throats because they smoked too hard on vaporizers and stuff like that. It doesn't seem like that's
solving the problem.
Right.
It's more enabling than anything.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I never really researched it heavily.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's just either do it or don't do it. Don't try and wean off with some other stuff that's probably equally as questionable.
Yeah, like the last time I tried, my psychiatrist subscribed patches for me.
Mm.
And like, I might use those on the plane ride down, but one of the hard things about those is just, like, it keeps you on the nicotine train, just
right.
Less of it.
Yeah.
So you're frustrated. You know what I mean? Like, I want more of this.
Yeah. You're getting some dosage. It's just kind of blue balling you a little bit.
That's a good blue balling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you're almost there, but it's just like not. I mean, that's kind of the point, right? It's supposed to wean you off. Like, is that the whole...
Yeah, that's the idea.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd always smoked casually for a long time, but I didn't really start smoking like I do now until I stopped drinking and using psychedelics. And that was almost 3 years ago now, so.
Yeah.
I think
one vice or the other.
Yeah, and that's
kind of deal.
I mean, that's we talk about that in my 12-step program. Is like, first things first. Don't be too hard on yourself about stuff. You know what I mean? It's very common for people in my program to smoke, but it's not a place I want to live for the rest of my life.
Yeah, that's interesting. You mentioned stop drinking, stop psychedelics, stop smoking. Weed is another one at that time, right? But psychedelics is, by research, the very thing that could wipe you of that habit.
Yeah, one of the founders of my 12-step program went through a period where he really thought that psychedelics could be a way to help people.
Thought or still thinks?
Well, he's dead now.
Ah, hence the past tense.
Yeah, I don't really know where he, like, ended on the subject. But I can tell you this. The one time I've taken mushrooms twice in my life, and the one time where I got, like, good and high, the first time didn't work, really. I mean, it just chilled me out.
Yeah.
That was, like, I had this sense of peace and awe about the world during that high that was so wonderful. And that one of the things that I experienced in early sobriety was similar moments of peace and awe about the world around me. And so it was this like realization, like, I don't need a psychedelic to get to this place.
Right.
I can live in this place by working my program.
Yeah.
You
don't need it. It's kind of like cheat codes a little bit. And I
think
Alan Watts said this, it's on the same spectrum of awakening or whatever you want to call it. Meditation is like setting a sail and psychedelics are like strapping yourself to a rocket system or a rocket without a guidance system, right? Yeah, there's no telling where it's going to go, but you're going to go somewhere.
Right.
Right. And it's on that same spectrum of whatever you want to call that.
Yeah.
So no, it's not needed.
Right. And that's not
what it be a useful tool.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I totally agree with you. Like,
and that I'm really excited for when it becomes more mainstream and more accepted and less taboo.
It's definitely on its way there.
It seems so.
Yeah.
How does that work with, I listen to people that talk about this stuff, but obviously you're admitting fault in some areas to a Schedule I drug on the record.
What do you mean?
People say, I took LSD. Oh. I took mushrooms. We're talking about it. It's recorded. It's put out there. Like, that's basically confession of doing said thing. Is there some kind of law in place or like something Maybe. That protects creative rights? Wow, somebody's at the door. Wow. It's Moose and Eddie. But yeah, I was always curious about that.
There might be some laws about it. I don't honestly know. It just seems like it's one of those things where authorities don't care unless you're a celebrity and they need to crack down on you, or you're admitting to violence or something like that. Like
running a drug ring.
Yeah. Like this guy I told you I interviewed, he talked about on the podcast how he smuggled suitcases of weed across state lines.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And so
it's so interesting. There's gotta be some kind of protection there, like freedom of speech. Like, I don't know. There's gotta be something, you would think.
Could be. I also think there's the courts are very exact. Like, they need to charge you with a specific time and place of breaking the law. Whereas if you're just generally admitting guilt, what are they gonna how are they gonna charge you?
It's a slippery slope. What are you talking about? Killing somebody?
Yeah.
On the podcast, casually. Like, does that just get more attention at that point and serve as a starting point for an investigation because of the severity, and therefore that starting point never happens? It's very interesting to me because...
Sure.
I don't know.
And it's not something I want to put you in a place where you feel like you might want to talk about something or don't want to talk about something because of those reasons. But in my opinion, you don't really have anything to worry about.
No, yeah, I think so too. I mean, especially now with like Ann Arbor, it's decriminalized. Denver is decriminalized. I think more and more, it's basically all over what we saw in 2014 with cannabis.
Right.
Right. And it going from something that was taboo to, it's literally a plant. It grew out of the ground and you're ingesting it. And
yeah.
I don't know. I always say like the right to experiment with your own consciousness, right? If you're not causing harm or you're just doing that for betterment of yourself, to think that it's wrong is dogmatic in its own right. Like, if you're just accepting it's bad, it's wrong because it's illegal, like, well, I don't know. Yes and no. That's also slippery slope of logic in terms of obeying laws of the land and like following your own path, but Hamilton, specifically just towards this.
Hamilton's Cornucopia.
Yeah.
Like, very mainstream.
What a plug. That's a good show.
Michael Pollan's book and videos about psychedelics. Like,
do you ever read his book?
No.
How to Change Your Mind?
No.
That was a lengthy read.
Was it?
It was lengthy.
Was it good?
It was good. Yeah, there was... I think, like, the first half of the book was great. The last 20% of the book was great. There's, like, a 30% of the book in there near the end that was about his own journey into it, through ayahuasca or whatever, and it kind of loses you a little bit just because he's just talking about these experiences over and over, but
yeah,
he's trying to describe something that's undescribable, so then you're just kind of lost in the jumble of words, and it's not really talking much about the culture that created it or the benefits that might come from it. It was just his experience, and trying to take something beyond words and put it into that is just so it became kind of dry and long at that point, but overall I would still recommend it. As just something that legitimizes the subject like further.
Yeah.
But
right, and it's those kind of things that like lead me to believe whether you're crossing some line by admitting guilt or you're not.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah, that's fair.
Seemingly.
Right.
If Michael Pollan and Hamilton Morris can do it without...
On, like, national television. Yeah.
Without consequence, then
I think we're okay.
We need like a somebody on the side Googling shit, because we need to tell them to like look this up. Tell us what this is. I mean, we could do that for ourselves. I'm kind of curious. Like, what is that creators like? What do you even say? Creators Protection. Let's see here. I don't think I'm gonna get to anything quick, but anyway, yeah, I think that aside, there's also this notion of just like stepping out of the psychedelic closet, right? Mm-hmm. And that takes a page from obviously stepping out of the closet in terms of
sexuality,
right? But stepping out of the psychedelic closet, like, I'm not hiding these things, because why am I hiding these things, you know, in general?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, and that's, it's good. It's all part of the larger movement towards that becoming less taboo, and just hearing people talk about it and what it's done for them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and like I said, mushrooms did something for me, a good thing.
Yeah.
What
did it do?
It gave me this incredible experience of peace, tranquility, and awe with the world around me.
I think the thing that's misunderstood, though, is that like it gives you an experience, but psychedelics are unique in the sense that that lasts and has lasting impact for long after, potentially permanent, in terms of mindset shift or perspective.
Well,
what would you say your long-term?
My long-term is out of that work? Yeah, a long-term effect of that was that's something that is achievable and I want.
Yeah. Yeah, Sam Harris talks about this in terms of it is a useful tool in the sense that he related it to like gymnastics, and he's like, if you've never seen the gold medal routine done, then you can't even visualize what it looks like, and therefore how do you know how to get there, if that makes sense, right? Okay. It's impossible. You might stumble upon it by chance, right? But if you are thrown into that and you see exactly what that gold medal routine looks like firsthand, mm-hmm. you can then do the very personal and long-tailed work of getting to that point. I was going to say recreating it, but that's not the right word, because it makes it seem like you're creating something, and in fact, you're removing stuff, if anything. You're getting down to, you're whittling down to what's core in life rather than trying to create something artificial.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought that was really interesting, and it really only takes one time, right? And you're talking about psychedelics as a replacement for anxiety or depression, and like, I heard somebody say, well, I don't want to be on psychedelics always. Like, they're relating it to a prescription pill for anxiety. You're like, well, no, it's literally, believe it or not, one and done. You do it once in some kind of therapy session with the right person, the right guide, etc., mm-hmm. set and setting.
Mm-hmm.
And the outcome kind of permanently sets you straight, or it very well has the potential to.
Yeah.
And then you maintain that via meditation or, other practices.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I would say that was my mushroom experience.
Yeah.
Was this a very pivotal, and remains pivotal.
Yeah.
Like, it's not something I want to undo.
Right.
Because I've gone through this shift in my life and admitted to myself, most importantly, but am comfortable saying I'm an alcoholic and an addict. It's not like I'm saying, oh, I wish I would never have taken mushrooms.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
That's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
For me, what it's saying is, I'm in a new chapter of life now.
Yeah.
And
it's punctuation kind of.
Yeah,
the experience is punctuating, and also punctuation ending something and starting something new.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't need to keep doing that in this new chapter.
Yeah. Another Alan Watts quote is, once you've received the message, hang up the phone.
Nice.
You know, like, so you've got it, right? There's no sense to continue it.
Sure.
Hang up the phone, right? Like,
and I would say, because of my disease, it's dangerous to continue it. Because
yeah.
I'll do it for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And I don't think everybody has my disease. I'm not anti-psychedelics or anti-alcohol or anything like that. It's right. just I believe I have a disease that makes it dangerous for me to continue to live that way.
Right.
Without...
different strokes for different folks.
Yeah. But I really, I mean, I respect the work that Hamilton Morris has done and Michael Pollan has done. And in many ways, like, you've shared some things that have really helped me, that it seems like you've come to those things through psychedelics.
Yeah.
And I'm like grateful for that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's why I started meditating.
Really?
100%.
No kidding.
Yes.
Cool.
10 years ago.
Whoa.
I mean, that talk about pivotal, like, you move to college away, right? And then in that same year, freshman year, is when I had my first experience with that, and combine that again with moving away, combine it with this, get a whole new worldview, mm-hmm. right? And from that, I remember the distinct realization of, like, all your five senses are kind of coming together and forming your perception of the world in your head, right? Like, if your perception of the world is in your head, like, in your consciousness, then in some way you have some control over that, right? It's not happening to you.
100%.
Right? Like, you are an active participant in this universe. You are the universe becoming conscious of itself. You are the universe, right? To go as far as saying that. And anyway, like, seeing that firsthand, it's meditation's a no-brainer out of that. Mm-hmm. There's no more needing to, like, justify or talk about it. It's like, yes, that's, of course you would. Why would you not meditate? Like, mm-hmm. why would you not learn how to not identify with thought?
Become right. Become the watcher.
Right. And so this is touches back perfectly into non-dualism, where we were going earlier.
Okay. Perfect segue.
Yeah. And I think
nicely done.
And I think I've been able to better articulate it lately with a shift in awareness that I've continued to, like, zero in on and lock in is, I think I took a note on it in my phone. I want to do this justice by reading exactly as I have it written. It is a shift in awareness of, like, instead of Daniel being the observer and the universe being observed, it's I am the observer and Daniel and the universe are being observed. Right? So, like, I takes away the linking up moments in the chain. Like, you're kind of rooting yourself from the identity of Daniel, and you are simply observing that. Right? So then when you are observing that, and I just did a meditation today where, like, I was deep in it. I wish I could have gone for another half hour. But much more deep than I typically get for a 10-minute session. And basically the whole meditation was about the sounds you hear, the breath that you're noticing, the physical sensations that you have, the thoughts that you have, the feeling. How do you know you have a face? Right? Like, is it pressure? Is it temperature? Is it vibration? Like, how do you know you have a head? Like, all these raw sensations and consciousness of the outside world and inside you, of your thoughts, are all coming from the same, arising in the same pre-existing condition of awareness or consciousness, right? And it's that single source that's aware of all of that. The single source that's not, the feeling that you are behind your face or in your head is a false one, right? Like, consciousness is not limited to that point. And just zeroing in on that thought of, like, that wherever that place is that all these different things are arising, you are now removing dualism of subject and object, of me and other. It is just awareness of everything as it is, non-dual, singular. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, like, that shift in awareness and describing it in that way of I becoming aware of Daniel and the universe and just, like, keeping that top of mind has been a useful language for me to recreate or return back to that mindset. So that's been my, like, advancement there. And hopefully that lands more than it did the day in Three Rivers.
But, I like it. It definitely does. I mean, and I agree with that. That's a huge part of what brings me peace and contentment is not just stepping back from the rest of the world, but stepping back from myself.
Yeah. Right. And
removing the I. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know. I hate that that gets too heady or existential for some reason. Like, we are all one, and like, it starts to put a bad taste in people's mouth, I feel like. I don't know. Maybe that's a me thing. But getting to that point, or this point in conversation, talking about this stuff, maybe in Western culture, maybe it's totally accepted in Eastern, I don't know. But in Western culture, it's not mainstream, certainly.
Sure.
I
think it depends on what people you surround yourself with.
Yeah. And is this a question of what I said earlier, like, this is just what works for me, and therefore it is, and I'm not going to force anybody else? Which, yes, there's truth to that. But also, I really believe this to be objective truth, because it's based off of direct sensory input experience. Right? Sure. I'm not drawing any other conclusions. I'm trying not to, at least. Mm-hmm. So, like, I believe it to be objective truth, right? But probably the same way that the lady that you were talking to that was saying this is right believed it to be objective truth.
Well, and there's a difference between holding something loosely and being willing to be wrong. Like, I would say you believe this to be objective truth, but you hold some space to say, but I could be wrong. Or maybe experience down the road will enhance this in some way.
You ever done the Enneagram test?
I have done, like, I've never done the full test, but I think I know what I am.
What are you?
Four.
Four. I don't remember what that is.
The individualist.
Okay. I think Enneagram's fascinating.
Yeah,
I agree. It's so fucking spot on.
What are you?
A nine.
What's the nine?
A nine is one that values harmony.
Okay.
Avoids conflict.
Right.
And I think it has some unique attribute that it can...
I can definitely see
it. It can shift to any of the other ones.
Okay.
You're always thinking about things from other people's perspective, or... you sometimes empathize too much instead of just having compassion. Mm. The difference being, like, compassion is I feel for you, but I'm not going to take on that burden myself as well. It's a quick way to burn out. Mm-hmm. Empathy is like, I'm going to literally feel these same things that you're feeling,
because
mm-hmm. I'm empathizing with that, right? And like, I'm too quick to switch to empathy. And what this, why I brought this up was that at the same time, I'm too quick to also dismiss my own convictions, like, or my own opinion. Like,
interesting.
Even at work, like, I know something, I really think that this is the right answer, given everything that we have,
mm-hmm.
right? But I'm too quick to entertain other ideas instead of my own, because
you have some self-esteem issues.
This perhaps, maybe, yeah, that could be it as well.
I have suffered with this. Is
it a confidence thing? Like, is it,
I think
it's
confidence.
Maybe it's a little bit of everything. It's a little bit of that. It's a little bit of that, my natural inclination to try to think through others' perspectives rather than just like sticking to my own convictions, you know. And
I think remaining teachable is an important thing for humanity. Like, I want to remain somebody who is teachable. I want to remain a learner.
Malleable, to some extent.
Yeah. Now, biologically, what we know is that as you age, your brain gets more rigid.
Yeah.
Just from a biological perspective. But my goal is to remain a learner, to remain teachable, somebody who is constantly taking on the new experiences and applying them to my life.
Or at least being able to consider it.
Well, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Is just because I'm learning it doesn't mean it's right, and doesn't mean it's going to change my opinions.
Yeah.
But I'm willing to let it if it should.
Yeah. Yeah, and this is another thing.
That's not what a dogmatic person is able to do.
Oh, interesting.
They are where they are. This is right.
Right.
And if it goes against this, then it must be wrong.
Right, and bad, and I need to fight it.
Right.
Yeah, cue suffering.
Right.
Right. Yeah, that's interesting. But it's another thing where it serves me well, I think, especially as a designer, and I can be curious and empathize, and that's the whole thing. And user-centered design and have empathy and et cetera, but when it comes to remaining unwavered, even in the face of extreme conviction, like, that is something to practice, because too easily I dismiss my own take. Mm-hmm. When sometimes, professionally, in life, whatever, we ultimately get to that conclusion, like, this, what I had thought was right, but we went kind of a roundabout way to get there because I did not put my foot down and speak up and say this is right, and that's probably also because I want to avoid conflict. You know?
Yeah, but there's also a lot more that goes into that. There's like inter-office politics and what hill do you want to die on?
Yeah,
and all that stuff.
Million dimensions. Yeah, that's a good point. And that's where I literally I have a note in my phone. It's been going since 2014, I think. It's called Life Notes, and I just capture.
You've told me about this.
Yeah.
And you've read some stuff from it. That's why it's really good.
That's what I just scrolled through. That's why it took me so long to get to that statement on
okay.
the observing statement of I observing the universe. I wrote in there at one point, like, in all caps, self-compassion. Hmm. Right? I was like, have some compassion for yourself, dude. Like, you're way too hard on yourself for, and this touches on what we just talked about and what we're talking about now. Just, like, don't forget to have that.
Yeah.
The same way you have it for others, have it for yourself, because
and forgive yourself.
Yeah.
Right? When you are wrong,
quick to forgive
when
yourself.
You did the wrong thing, when you're upset with yourself, now you gotta let that go. You gotta forgive yourself just like you forgive other people.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot to it, for sure. Like, I completely agree with what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like, getting to the point where I liked myself was a hard thing.
Why don't they teach that shit in school? Like, just that kind of stuff. Life stuff. Like, let me take life 101. Or, yeah. I don't know, like... You can cover a whole curriculum without ever crossing boundaries of religion or like anything like that people would balk at.
I agree.
You know, it's just basic human truths on how we need to live with ourselves.
Well, and this brings up a really interesting part of society. Do you know what the most popular major is across America and has been for some time?
Business?
Psychology.
Really? Psychology is the number one degree?
Apparently. At least the last time I heard this. Yeah, and has been for quite some time. And I mean, what my mind goes to there is, at that age, people's minds are opening up, and they're gravitating towards studying themselves and their mind and the mind of humanity, and they're able to pick whatever they want to study, and so that's what they study. Whereas once they get into the workforce, they go up to all these different places.
I was going to say, what job is hiring all these psychology majors?
Well, it's just same jobs that hire you, no matter if you were a professional, if you were a music major or a language
major.
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, there's a bunch of majors out there that aren't quote unquote professionally marketable.
What was your major again?
International business and management.
Okay, so that's more pragmatic, I'd say, on the side of things.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, for me, the whole major just seemed to be like one big, huge, make sure revenue is greater than cost. And maybe I'm oversimplifying things, but there was some good stuff in there, but for the most part...
That's what, like, you took after 4 years,
basic,
huh?
Basic concepts.
How much you pay for that advice?
Nothing. I got paid to do that.
Oh, yeah. How did that work out for you?
I got a full ride, stipend, living stipend included scholarship.
Man.
By the Taiwanese government. It was great.
Through some application that you submitted? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
The
I forgot about
Ministry
that.
Of Education.
Yeah, that's impressive.
For Taiwan. I mean, you could do it. There's tons of... you could do an advanced degree. There's tons of scholarships out there... Yeah, I know.
I'm good.
Right. But I mean, I wouldn't say it's impressive. It's just the route I took.
Advanced degrees are like happening among my friend group right now, I feel like. And UX is a field where it doesn't... I mean, maybe a master's in HCI, human-computer interaction, might further your understanding more. But like, it is notably a career that does not abide by any kind of certification.
Right. It's constantly evolving,
Yeah, it's how well can you produce? Kind of like developers and Apple and Google dropping their requirement for a bachelor's degree. It's just like, can you produce? Can you do it in an intelligent way? Right?
Right.
If so, show us your portfolio. Great, you're hiring me. I don't give a shit what kind of accreditations you have.
Yeah.
So that's why I was quick to say no thanks on like additional schooling and the money and effort involved. Doesn't make a lot of sense for where I'm at. I don't think. Who knows? That might change.
Yeah. And but, maybe you don't study UX at all. Maybe you decide to study Stoicism. Like, who knows? But yeah, if it's free, like it's
okay. If it's free, yeah.
Why not choose whatever?
Why not just read a book at that point?
Well, you know? There's that too.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of routines from earlier, the dog walking every day, right? At least reading some of my personal book. At least reading something about my career or profession.
Okay.
Like a Medium article.
Okay.
And then meditation and physical exercise.
Those are your five.
Those are five things that must happen every single day.
Go through it one more time.
Kind of go through it in order in my day. It's some kind of education or article about my job. It is reading a personal book, memory, whatever it is at the time. It is meditation, mental exercise. It's going to the gym, physical exercise, and then walking the dogs. Right, so that's the kind of going into more each in depth. I am a browser tab hoarder. At the end of last year, I had fucking 50, 60 browser tabs open. And over break, I went through a browser tab cleanse, is what I called it. And I just tried to read as much as I could. And the amount of growth and learning and insights that I got from doing the exercise, it's like, you dumbass, you could have had this all along. And instead, you're prioritizing, quote unquote, more important pressing work. This is the work. Like, this is stuff that's allowing you to perform better on a day-to-day basis. Why are you not treating it as such?
Hmm.
It's like, it's not acceptable to not. I read one tab I have open, I read it once per day. And until, I'm still working on this list. It's down to like 14 tabs now. Until I get that
congratulations.
Down, thank you. Until I get it down to zero, to where I can start again, I'm not allowed to click any new links or like open new articles from the email newsletters. It kills me because there's some good stuff out there, but I'm not allowed to. So I'm doing that every single day, and that's already just the return on that is so obvious immediately, and just that growth is so important, feels good. So that's that. Meditation, we've obviously covered that, why I need to do that every single day. I strive for 20 minutes at lunch, occasionally settle for 10. I don't feel like 10 is typically enough time to get into the depth that I want to, though.
Okay.
Physical exercise, I always say I want to and I never get it done, and it's such a piss poor. I have no excuse. I have no kids. Like, I even if I do, like, I still would want to stand by the fact that you have no excuse not to. When I have a home gym, I walk to my basement and do it. And so this is where I've been trying to employ like James Clear and Tom McCabe's type of things, and I don't do these things in their entirety, maybe how you're thinking about them every single day. But to check my reading my personal book box or check my working out box, just master the art of showing up first, right? So like to check that box, I'll allow myself to do 10 push-ups. And I already got my physical exercise in for the day. Or I will read 2 pages in my book, right? Just enough. And now I've found myself like craving though that structure, which is very weird for me because I've always pride myself, but like I've really valued being spontaneous, spontaneity, not having routine, structure, doing as I feel.
Right.
And turns out it's not a good way to get things done consistently. So like I've stuck to these just like 5 core things in my day, and
nice.
Yeah. So it feels good, and that routine and structure has been something that I've been really thriving off of, I feel like. So I don't know how we got on the tangent, but
I like it.
That's kind of the staples in my day, and I think I've knocked them all out today for the most part. Nice. I may have to read a page or two tonight,
okay,
but yeah,
not bad.
So yeah, you read anything good?
You know, that's not part of my routine right now, and sometimes I feel bad about that. and sometimes I'm totally fine with that.
Yeah.
My things are, I don't take the dogs for a walk every day, but on a lot of days I do.
Yeah.
So the whole, like, getting outside, getting some exercise in, that kind of thing is important to me.
Yeah.
A big thing that I notice I'm different about when I don't do it is one of my practices is I write down three things that I'm grateful for every day. Mm. And it just puts, I mean, it's amazing how it just puts me in a grateful mindset for the whole day.
Do you ever do that? Is that always in a past tense or present tense? Or is it ever in the future?
I've never done it in the future. I've only done it in past or present. I like that.
So that's something that, I don't know where I came across this, but like that's the key to...
Manifesting. Interesting.
Is not just saying, I really want this thing and I deserve it. Like, it's feeling gratitude and feeling that feeling as if you already had that thing. Feeling gratitude for that thing that you have yet to get or have.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
And so, yeah, that's maybe something to think about is,
yeah,
how do I do it right now? Do I ever think about something I'm grateful for that has not yet happened?
Yeah.
Right? And embody that mindset. And as voodoo as that might seem, and I'm a big believer on manifestation, and you got a universe within you, and kind of you have a lot of influence over your world. It's kind of like the opposite of victim's mentality. Like, it's happening to you, or, mm-hmm. you know, you are an acting force within it.
So what are you working on manifesting right now?
That's a good question on the spot. I don't know. I'm at an inflection point. First thing that comes to mind, I'm at an inflection point in life where, like, I'm on the cusp of potentially starting a family.
Oh, really? We're there. Okay, cool.
Yeah,
man.
I mean, sometime in the near future.
Congratulations.
Right. I'm not That's there super yet. Cool. Not there man. Yet, but I'm on the cusp.
Yeah.
Right. And thinking about
you and
what
your
that
partner
means.
Are, like, on the same page about,
yeah,
bringing some children into the world.
Yeah. Neat. Just, like, raising a miniature human. Like, that seems fun. And I don't know. I think I'm manifesting what kind of, this is gonna sound very zoomer of me, like Gen Z, but like, what's the vibe of the household that I create as the man of the house, or like for my family, right? Like 20 years down the line,
what's the energy?
What's the energy of that? How does that feel, right? And like, I'm manifesting close friends and family and that really good energy that surrounds it. Mm-hmm. Being there. I don't know if that makes sense, but that's what I've been like manifesting. That's something that has yet to happen, but is core and important to me. Right?
I like that.
So.
I like it way better than if you were to answer, like, to get $1 million in my bank account.
Yeah.
You
but, like,
I mean?
So...
Like,
so
that's fine if that's what you want.
So I'm human, right? But, so like, there's also some material things that, like, that feed into that vision. So, like, something that I fucking love is wake surfing.
Really?
Yes.
I still have yet to try this, but I really want
to. You seen wake surfing?
I have.
When they're just, like, you... don't even need a rope. It's just like 10 miles an
so
hour.
Cool.
It's super chill. You're just carving some liquid gnar, you know. that's, talk about like a more of a goal, right? Material goal. Like, I want that. I want that on a lake, a house on a lake. And yes, because of the fun that it brings, but also that contributes towards the quality time that you will have with kids and family and friends or whatever.
Like, really good point.
That is an activity that is something that everybody's always looking to do. You can always be a host with something like that.
Brings people together,
right? And the energy around it is always just immaculate, right? And so, like, that's something that I've connected to at, like, a value level back to my more reptilian brain material cravings.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like there's still a really beautiful, like, selflessness in that desire. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That feeds into this other manifestation of bringing good energy to your children. Like, you want to bring that to them with this really this activity that's brought you a lot of joy.
Yeah, and it's outside, which I value a lot, and everything about it. It's too bad they're so damn expensive.
You know what? I would totally be up to going in on a lake house with you.
Yeah.
It's one of my goals, too, of having, like, a cottage or living on a lake or something like that.
Yeah.
I've talked about this with my brother, like, splitting a place.
Yeah.
To share, because it is such a, like, water does something amazing for me.
Yeah.
I'm an ocean. People talk about being mountain people and ocean people. I love the mountains, but I'm an ocean person for sure.
I don't know, man. I think I'd say I'm a mountain person.
Good. That's great.
I don't know. I'm planning a trip right now. We're planning the trip out to Pacific Northwest, Seattle, and all the surrounding national parks.
Nice.
It's going to be my first time ever going to that part of the country.
It's gorgeous.
But I've been around mountains, and in Colorado is probably the most, but like more so canyons and stuff further south. But I've never been around like the luscious Northwest kind of mountain.
Yeah.
Lake in the mountains, Crater Lake kind of vibe.
Nice.
And every time I see pictures of that or just like see that kind of setting, it's like calling my soul. Like, I just, it feels peaceful to see that.
It is peaceful.
And I'm taking that trip, and I'm very excited to see if that feels as true as it does from a distance. And I feel like it will.
I'm not saying the mountains don't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I hate the mountains.
No, of course not.
But yeah, and I'm 100% with you. Like, just so you know, you're going to love the Pacific Northwest.
I think so, yeah.
It is a beautiful place.
I've been lucky enough to think I've been around the country for the most part, like East Coast, somewhat up and down, and I guess maybe not Middle Plains. Like,
oh, really? You haven't made like a special point to go to Nebraska or Iowa or Oklahoma?
No.
Or Kansas?
No.
Interesting.
The furthest west I've been on the east side of the country, like pressing up against this section we're talking about, is, I don't know, probably Chicago or something. No. Louisiana? I'm totally blanking on what's the city in Louisiana?
New Orleans?
Yeah. Jesus Christ. It's getting late. New Orleans, I think I've been there. That's like the furthest west I've been. And then the furthest east I've been on the west side of the country is, you know, maybe Denver.
Okay.
The Grand Canyon area. I mean, I'm terrible at geography, but... So, like, yeah, there's this whole section in the middle that I haven't seen. And so, that aside, the Pacific Northwest is, like, a region I've never been to, and I feel like it calls me the most. So, we've been very intentional about making that trip happen, and I think we're staying in like a different place every single night for the 8 nights we're out there. Just on the go, seeing national parks.
I love it.
Everything a part of it. So, yeah.
Very cool.
Should be good.
So is there anything else we should cover? I mean, and just so you know, we can do follow-up episodes. We don't have to like...
Am I invited back?
Oh, 100%.
How many sequels have you done with others?
I do solo shows sometimes, so if you count shows with myself, then
not
a lot.
Not shows with yourself.
All the other ones have been, like, I take sections of interview. I have had one guy come back for a second interview, but I didn't use the second interview, or I haven't yet. I still have it. But doesn't mean we can't.
Yeah. Well, cool. I'm looking forward to that. I don't think there's anything else. My list was why you started the podcast, why you chose to interview me, and then non-dualism was my three items that came to mind. Of like, I'd be remiss if I didn't cover these three things today with MJ. And hearing your vision for the podcast, authenticity, simple life, being real, I think we touched on that pretty good. I think 100%. We stayed right in line, so I think we checked the box today.
Yeah, 100%.
This was fun, by the way. I really enjoyed it.
Isn't it interesting how like that thing just kind of fades into the background? The microphone just happens to be there's a red light there, but like you forget it's there.
It feels like a normal hangout where you're a conversational wizard, as I say.
I don't know about that. I mean, thank you. I don't want to
discount your opinion of continuing it and like just
letting it flow.
Yeah, I can't get to. I'm not somebody who can just like say stuff, statements, and like have impact. I need to get to a level of depth of like explaining and reasoning and complexities. And like, let's dig into all of it. So like, and that's what you allow by like probing further and just the simple question of, tell me more. You know, like,
I love that question.
You know, tell me more. And I use it all the time now, but like prior to hanging out with you, that was new to me at the time. And I was like, okay, yeah, I will tell you more. And then you're an active listener. So it's
a good quality. The tell me more has changed my life.
It's good.
Isn't it? And it's so useful in getting out of tricky spots, like office politics spots. Like,
interesting.
Like when somebody's saying something you don't agree with, or you're reacting to, number one, it gives you space to think more. Number two, maybe they'll figure it out for themselves that this is dumb.
Yeah.
But like, tell me more. I'm a big believer in tell me more.
that's a good one. That is a good one.
Yep. Cool. Yeah. Well, I've had a good time. I mean, I didn't really know what it was going to be. My goals for the podcast were definitely to have you on. Because I feel like you're this father of the podcast. Really? Like,
I can't believe that title.
This really important influencer. And just in general, like a really good friend. I find that interviewing people I don't know is interesting for many reasons. And good things come out of it. But there's like a comfortability that comes with knowing someone really well.
Yeah.
That's hard to mimic, hard to like,
yeah,
spend a couple of minutes like, and how would you like to be introduced, and do you have any questions about the podcast? And then we're in it, you know what I mean? Like, whoa.
Yeah. Speaking of introductions, we can do any of that shit.
Yeah, I kind of like that. Yeah. Is there any way you'd like me, when I do my intro, to refer to you?
Do you do like a separate recorded, like edited intro?
I do.
Oh, I'm going to let you
decide.
One. Yeah.
Sweet.
However, I you like think. It.
Do you feel like your goals for finding out why I do the podcast, finding out why you're on it, and talking about
non-dualism
were accomplished?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sweet.
Not because of my own personal agenda of non-dualism, but because I think that was a major open thread left
with us.
With us, personally.
I love that you've been holding on to this for so long.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Because it's deep. And I was like, man, I'm going to dig into this further and understand it more. And it's slow progress. But here we are 2 years later, and I have some update for you.
Yeah. On it. I like it. But,
yeah, man.
All right, man.
Thank you.
I'm going to turn it off.
All right.
Good times.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's what you're supposed to say.
Right. And thanks for coming on the show, Daniel.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was a good time. Look forward to be back.
I really love the variety in this conversation. Everything from how we define perfection for ourselves, to heady concepts like non-dualism, to learning that Daniel is hoping to become a parent soon. These are the sorts of conversations that bring smiles to my face as I drive home from interviews. One of the things that sticks with me above others in this interview is Daniel's question, "Do you enjoy being with yourself when you're alone?" I think my answer to that question has changed and gone back and forth at different times in my life. I like it as a barometer to check in with myself. Do I feel a positive amount of self-worth? Do I like me? This question of how I feel about being alone brings insights to me. It is a question I hope to make a part of periodic check-ins with myself over the years to come, as I enter, if I live an average lifespan, what will be the second half of my life. If you are interested in being a guest on the podcast, visit anchor.fm/asimplelife and leave me an audio message with your contact information. To support A Simple Life with Michael Jefferies, subscribe to the podcast, give us a ratings on iTunes or Spotify, or best yet, share the podcast with a friend. Thanks for listening. We'll see you down the road.